Awakening to a new way of living.
Namaste, good morning and Om Shanti. Welcome to the third and the final day of the IT Wing conference of the Rajyoga Education Research Foundation hosted by the Brahma Kumaris. Awakening, the word itself, brings us to a new light. Awakening to a new way of thinking, awakening to a new way of living are aspects that we have understood. We've also understood over the past few days the aspects of spirituality, the three lessons of meditation. The day three promises a lot more. In this morning session, we would learn a new way of doing things, a new way of working, a new way of leading. Our next speaker is Brahma Kumari Sister Madhu. Brahma Kumari Sister Madhu is the national coordinator of the Brahma Kumari's IT Wing. We will listen to her good wishes for this conference.
Om Shanti. Brahma Kumaris aur Rajyog Education and Research Foundation ke IT Wing dwara ayojit conference Awakening to Call of Time ke shubh avsar par aap sabhi ka abhinandan abhivadan. समय तो सदा परिवर्तनशील है, उसमें भी खास अभी का जो समय है उसमें हम बहुत बड़े बड़े परिवर्तन देख रहे हैं। सारी दुनिया थम सी गई है। वर्क फ्रॉम होम की वजह से अधिकांश लोग एक ही जगह ठहर गए हैं, एक और जहां सब कुछ स्टैंड स्टील हो गया है, वहां दूसरी ओर आईटी से जुड़ी सेवाएं बहुत एक्टिव हो गई हैं। दुनिया के बहुत से कारोबार में आईटी की बड़ी भूमिका है, इसलिए किसी का कार्य बहुत ही बढ़ गया है और किसी का काम ही एकदम बंद हो गया है। ऐसे इंबैलेंस के समय अपना इनर बैलेंस बनाए रखने की अत्यधिक आवश्यकता है। इनर वर्ल्ड के प्रति जागृति लाना जरूरी है। जागना अर्थात अवेक होना और अपनी सोच, फीलिंग्स, एटीट्यूड, बोल, व्यवहार, कार्य, लाइफस्टाइल को मैनेज करना, जिससे बदलते हालात को हम सही रिस्पॉन्स दे सके। इसके लिए स्पिरिचुअल विजडम चाहिए, जिससे हम अपने इनर सेल्फ या आत्म स्वरूप को अनुभव करें। हमारा आत्म स्वरूप सत्य है, अविनाशी है। अपने इस ओरिजिनल रूप पर आधारित होने से हम स्टेबल, स्थिर हो जाते हैं। अपने इनर सेल्फ को स्टेबल बनाएंगे तो बाहर कितनी भी हलचल हो हम स्थिर रहेंगे। आंतरिक जागरूकता से अपनी असली असीम क्षमता, गुण, शांति, शक्ति का भी हम प्रयोग कर सकते हैं। आत्मस्वरूप में रहने से हमारा माइंड क्लियर रहता है, हमारी अंडरस्टैंडिंग बढ़ जाती है, जिससे सिचुएशन को वे लोगों को पूरी तरह से समझ सकते हैं। इसी कारण हम पॉजिटिव एटीट्यूड और लाइफस्टाइल से सही रिस्पॉन्स पे विजयी बन सकते हैं। इसीलिए कहते हैं जागने वाले की किस्मत भी जाग जाती है। जागरण शुभ होता है। जागरण के साथ सुबह को जोड़ा जाता है, अतः हम जागेंगे तो सुबह की सुनहरी किरणों का भी हम स्वागत कर सकेंगे। वैसे भी आज दुनिया का कोई भी काम आईटी के बिना पूरा नहीं होता है। आईटी सबके साथ कनेक्टेड है, इसलिए आईटी से संबंधित प्रोफेशनल्स जागेंगे तो हर क्षेत्र में जागृति आएगी। तो देखिए, आप सारे विश्व का आधार है। समय की पुकार सुनकर जागने तथा सारे विश्व को जगाने की जिम्मेवारी का ताज आपके सिर पर चमक रहा है। आप सब अपने मन के श्रेष्ठ स्थिति से सारे विश्व की परिस्थिति को शुभ बनाने का कार्य करें और सदा खुश, संतुष्ट, स्वस्थ रहें। यही हमारी शुभ भावना, शुभकामना है। ओम शांति।
थैंक यू सो मच मधु दीदी जी फॉर योर गुड विशेस। दिस फर्स्ट सेशन इज अवेकनिंग टू द न्यू वे ऑफ वर्किंग। आफ्टर ऑल आवर लाइव्स require us to work. Work takes a major part of our life. Even though we talk about the professional and personal balance, we often see that work takes so much. Our speaker for the first session is B.K. Ken O'Donnell. Ken is an author of over 15 books over personal and professional development. He is also the coordinator of Brahmakumari's services across South America. He also brings in a wide range of professional experience. He has worked as a consultant of strategic execution and professional leadership across multinational companies, NGOs and governments in Australasia, Americas and in Europe. He has been a student and teacher of Raj Yoga meditation for more than 40 years. Over to Ken on his thoughts on a new way of leading. Awakening to a new way of working.
Hello everyone. Greetings of peace. I've been asked to talk about the topic of awakening to a new way of working and leading. I would actually emphasize the word new, because are we going to move really to a new circumstance, or will we just leaving one cage and going to a new cage? This is what I would question. It's very difficult to predict the future at this moment, because we're in a global crisis without precedent. It's the most severe economic recession in nearly a century, and there has been enormous damage to people's health, jobs, well-being, and there are actually three scenarios according to the IMF, according to the World Bank, the OECD. They're like this. There are some countries, like Brazil, for example, where the pandemic is going to get much worse before it gets better. And then there definitely seems to be a second wave. After they open up a little bit, there'll be a second wave. And according to the statistics, this will also have an impact on the economy. The major economies of the world have taken a hit at the moment, about 6 or 7%, and then maybe another 3% if there's another wave. And the last one will be one in which we sort ourselves out and we carry on. That seems pretty unlikely at the moment, but hard to say. Now, what is the virus? Actually, it's a piece of genetic material 10,000 times smaller than a grain of salt. So this tiny little thing, because I don't know if it's a form of life or what, it's just some genetic material like a seed looking for some soil to plant itself in. That little tiny thing has put the whole of humanity against the wall. And there doesn't look to be a viable vaccine, at least until mid-second semester of 2021, around September. But really, back to normal. It's unlikely that we'll get back to the normal before the lockdown, how we knew things to be then. And as we've seen in the other talks in this program, there's been an impact on health, on society, our relationships, our social arrangements, and even further, we can see the impact on the environment. In fact, global warming is thinking very much this situation. Traffic, of course, has reduced, and our cities have become more empty. So if we look at a map of the world, if we look at all of the countries that this great lockdown, and that's probably what history is going to call it, I can call the Great Depression, there'll be the Great Lockdown of 2020. It's much worse than the financial crisis of 2009, and on par with the Great Depression, even worse. We don't really know the full consequences at the moment. But if you look at a map of the world where they're predicting the drop in GDP, most of the major economies are in the red. There are very few economies around zero and extremely few above zero in terms of percentage growth. So this will be sort of enormous. And again, if you look at the graphs of NASDAQ, the New York Stock Exchange, any stock exchange actually, since the beginning of the year, it's just, you know, gone in a nosedive. And this is the fastest and greatest collapse since 1929. And of course, this will have effect on our workplace. You know, they're empty at the moment in most places. In Brazil, where I am, the lockdown has, you know, continues because here there are more than 50,000 deaths and over a million cases, and it's getting worse before it's getting better. And the actual statistics, I've got a friend who works in the health area. He's a health administrator in Sao Paulo City. And he says the real number is about 10 times this. So some economies like Brazil are really taking a huge hit. But if we try to imagine the workplace after everything sort of, you know, somehow or the other gets slightly back to normal, then of course they will have to maintain all these protocols of hygiene and health and social distancing and so on. Probably also having learnt that many of the jobs can be done from home in this digital age. A lot of people, you know, probably not be going physically back to work anyway, except now and then. And so that has other consequences. Many companies will, for example, well, why are we paying such a huge rent for a place where there are only 20% of the people that we had before the lockdown? So there's going to be a lot of different consequences of this. And I've got a friend, this whole story of working remotely. He has a lawyer's office. He had 30 lawyers working for him. And of course, they all had to work from home. And he has seen that 95% of the work that he does can be done from home. So he's moved to the countryside. He's got a place in the countryside. And all of his other fellow lawyers who are part of his team are also working from their homes, some of them in the countryside, some of them in the city. And of course, the level of, you know, stress in the country is much less, you know, not only because there's less chance of getting the virus, but the air's cleaner, the water's cleaner, the way that life is more simple. And so, of course, he's preferring that than, you know, facing the traffic every day in Sao Paulo. In Sao Paulo, there are 9 million cars, at least pre-COVID. So you can imagine the traffic jams in a city like that with 20 million people. He would take at least an hour to work and an hour to come back. And if there's a real traffic jam, then maybe 2 hours there and back. So he's definitely decided to continue at his countryside place and doing whatever he can from there. And of course, he's decreased his overheads and so on and so forth. And he's more time with his family. This was a big benefit for him. And more time, actually, to reflect, because he's starting to learn to meditate as well. So if that, you know, if that is looking like what he's going to do, and I've talked to other friends they're also going to do the same thing. So remote work is actually here to say it's not an option. It will be the norm. And this will have an effect on the way our cities are organized as well, and all sorts of things, you know. Less people in the cities means less services, less commerce, and so on. It's very hard to predict. But anyway, this whole thing of working remotely, of course, there are many jobs you have to be physically present, you know. You can't get away from that, like hospitals and different industries. You have to have manual labor. But even there, you know, how can they work into a factory that has a lot of people on a production line and there has to be social distancing on the production line, each one in only 4 square meters of space rather than 2 as it is in many places? There'll be a whole lot of restructuring of the architecture of buildings even, as less people are being able to be in the same place. And of course, in all of this, the IT world is on the front line. You know, they've been responsible and are responsible for allowing employees to be productive with their technology, more productive. And so because of the economic impact, probably many companies will be having less people. And they will rely more and more on technology to get things done that more people would have been doing. Or in the case of factories, more reliance on automation rather than physical human beings. I mean, these are just some of the things that we can see coming up. And, of course, the IT people have to maintain the systems for remote work, including higher levels of security that this entails, because, you know, some people have to be connected with servers and they have to go there to access them. But security has become a big problem. Even, you know, we've seen with these online conferencing programs, how much hacking is still going on. The other day I was doing a presentation. In the middle of the presentation, somebody hacked in and started to play some heavy metal music as I was speaking. So, very interesting experience. I mean, we need to improve these things, and it's the IT people that have to, you know, come up with the answers, I suppose. And because they're heavily involved in the organization, they'll be very much involved in the reorganization of things and the distribution of things. The supply chain, there are some gaps in some industries, because of obvious reasons. And so how do we get around the gaps? Are there intelligent solutions to, you know, supply chain problems? And of course, one of the things that may happen because of this over-dependence on the digital world, over-dependence on the internet at the moment, who knows if we've got systems sufficient to cope with such a load. And we've already seen so many people accessing at the same time really creates a burden, especially in poorer countries. And so you're in the middle of an important conversation and suddenly it breaks down. So we have to somehow or the other be more real about our lives. Is this the sort of world we want? Is this the sort of society we want? Is this the sort of workplace we want? Because there are many other factors to consider, which I'll talk about. There's something called ESG, which means the balance between environmental consciousness and, you know, care, I suppose that's the right word, social responsibility, and governance, ESG. And these days, and I was reading something about it the other day, the investments have been going towards those that have a good ESG balance. Because in a sense, the COVID-19 pandemic illustrates the materiality of environmental and social risk factors. And along with that, the importance of strong governance. And this is not just in a country, of course, we've seen so many leaders making huge mistakes with all, you know, with all of this and making crazy statements about what is and what's not, what the solutions could be, and taking the wrong decisions. So a lot of what's going on is due to wrong calls by our leaders, our political leaders. But at the same time, in a place, in a corporate situation, it's the same. We have to look after the health and safety, which is like a mixture of the environmental issues in a company and the social setup, the well-being of our people. We have to be concerned about that. And we have to be good managers about all of these different unknown factors that will be creeping into the way we do things. In fact, ESG is not about how much money you make, it's about how you are conducting your business. How are you conducting your operations? So for sure, ESG factors have to be taken into account when we're looking at the new leadership's competencies that we need. Because there will be a more acute focus on this sort of ESG leadership. This will become the norm, I feel. And so the challenge to remain resilient in this sort of environment, in this sort of marketplace, in this sort of world, will definitely test our resilience. Will definitely test our effectiveness. So, let's talk now a little bit about leadership itself. I saw an article the other day in the Forbes magazine, the seven new leadership or the seven leadership competencies that will be important in a post-COVID world. And it's a pretty logical list, actually. For example, empathy is one of the characteristics of the leader. Because we have to become counselors-in-chief to our people, in a way. People have been hurt, shocked, depressed, stunned. They've been in panic and suffering. They've lost loved ones. Maybe they know someone has lost loved ones. They become sick themselves and recovered. Anyway, there are a lot of things, and we have to, as leaders, be empathetic, pick up what they've been going through and sort of, relate it at a human level. Because the essence of leadership is the conversation and the relationship. It's not just a box in an organogram. Organizational chart. So empathy will be there. Clear communication is also one, and we have to make sure our communication is fact-based and reliable. There's sort of been so much fake news going around, and if I'm a leader, I really have to check what I say, because there's so much nonsense flying around. So if I have a good source of facts about things, and I very clear in communicating them, then that's a good thing. You know, look at, for example, the governor of New York, Mario Cuomo. You can see how every day we'd have a briefing and put the things exactly as they were to the people. Very inspiring. Also, we have to be honest without ambiguity. Now, ambiguousness is one of the characteristics of the so-called VUCA world. At the end of the Cold War, the US military were trying to, what is the sort of world we're moving into? And they came up with this acronym, VUCA, which means volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And since then, since the end of the 1980s, everything has become more volatile, more uncertain, more complex, and more ambiguous. So lots of opinions about the same thing, lots of meanings behind things, and I have to become a very good understander of what's going on and transmit that in a nice way. The idea of managing virtual teams will be a challenge for me because they're used to having eyeball contact with their people and having, you know, physical meetings, and they can exert the pressure of their vibration in a meeting, but in a virtual meeting it's pretty hard to do that because of, you know, the vibrations is not carried over the internet so much as it, if I'm in a room and there's sort of a icy feeling and the elephant in the room, nobody's mentioning that because the vibration of fear is there, or the vibration of, of panic may come in. So managing virtual teams will be a big, big deal. Also, as I said before, resilience, which is like flexibility and adaptability. Because we can't control the chaos, we can't do it, no way. And so then I have to have humility and to show that I'm not infallible, to show that, you know, I'm just a human being like you. No one has all of the answers, and to be able to engage others and include others and get the best out of people, it's absolutely essential to have this, the art of being humble. And of course, active listening, which is sort of connected with empathy. Listening to people's stories, listening between the lines, listening behind what they're saying to really get the right meaning out of things. So this is an art, isn't it? But how? This looks great on paper, but how? You know, how are you going to have that list in practice? Especially if we've got this mode of excessive thinking. You know, I have to become an interpreter of the reality around me. I have to become a translator of meaning, in a sense. So if my head is so full of stuff, you know, so full of many thoughts, excess thoughts, unnecessary thoughts, useless thoughts, negative thoughts, if I have 1,000 waking minutes in a day and something happening in my mind every half second, that's 120,000 things. So though I would like to be that list that I just showed you, if I'm having such a confusion inside myself, I'm probably robbing myself of the opportunity of seeing anything clearly, to be able to communicate it clearly, to be able to pick up on what people are going through, to be able to guide them through, you know, the rough seas at the moment, because I've got storms going on inside my own head. And so this is something absolutely essential. I have to deal with it. I have to learn to have less thoughts and better thoughts. And it is possible to go from 120,000 bits every day to 80,000, 60,000, 20,000, maybe 10,000, who knows, 5,000. Of course, you have 5,000 essential bits going in on your mind every day. You can even reduce it more than that. But because there's less stuff disputing for the same space inside your head, then you'll see things clearly. You'll see things better. You know, part of that is to learn to be a detached observer, to take the high ground, to see the bigger picture, to see things in a bigger context. What are all of the systems that are interacting with each other and producing this event? What are the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual layers involved in a situation? Because if I can see more, I'll be able to understand more. And if I can understand more, I'll be able to decide better. So these are, you know, some of the things that we have to look at if we're going to help lead people through this craziness at the moment. And if I want to diminish my thinking and improve it, I have to learn to meditate. It's not really an option anymore. I have to organize my thinking. I have to organize my perception. And I have to become calm so that I can be stable and stable governance, stable management is absolutely essential at the moment. And I have to introduce, therefore, different meditative pauses in my daily life. So it's stopping now and then. 1 minute in an hour, for example. If I learn how to stop for a minute in an hour, the other 59 minutes are fantastic. Much more productive. Much more clear. And so part of it also is to develop a positive vision towards the self and towards others. To see, you know, behind the rubbish. To learn how to value the self rather than, you know, condemn the self. Your self-respect is that, isn't it? I have to learn what my real innate value is. I am a spiritual being going through this human experience, whatever it is. And my nature, you know, at the base is peace, love, contentment, truth. These are my basic innate characteristics. And I can use those as a sort of a springboard for greater things, you know. If I don't have the qualities, I can't form the virtues in a way. And if I don't have the qualities and the power to do that, which I would get through meditation, then I can't do all of that list that I just showed you. I can't be more empathetic. I can't communicate better. I can't be more resilient. I can't be more honest. So, you know, it's easy to make lists, but we have to work on ourselves and see the best in others, because that will create and generate trust, isn't it? If I see behind all of the stuff and I see that individual like me, in fact, at a deeper level, we're very similar. When I look at someone else, I'm also seeing how I am deeply. I am a peaceful being, and the other one was also. But we've forgotten that. Again, I have to learn to cultivate my life. Your life is like a garden in a way, and the people that are part of it, they're like the plants also. If I'm a leader, I've got some plants to look after, right? And so what does a gardener do? Waters the thing, make sure there's enough light, make sure the soil is good, make sure there's enough space between the plants, make sure there's enough time for them to grow. So I need to give the light of understanding. I need to give the water of care and love. I need to provide the soil of values. I need to give the space of freedom. And I need to give the time of patience. So these are the, I need to have an attitude like that with people and with myself. If I want something to grow, I have to create healthy growing conditions. And I should never forget that I'm the one holding, I'm the one painting my life. I'm the one opening up the way towards the future. So I've got a paintbrush in my hand. It's not that the road is just opening up behind me. I'm also painting the road. So I'm the painter of my life. I'm the one who's making things open up. It's not, I'm just waiting for things to open up. I have to be, you know, proactive and open things up. I have to, if I want to go this way, let me paint myself that way as a painter, right? Paint the road and then walk along it. Now, meditation itself, and I've just got a couple of minutes more for this, but basically it's to become as calm as, you know, we've seen a lake in the mountains that's like a mirror, it's so still and so clean that it's reflecting all of the trees perfectly. And if you throw a rock into that lake, then you disturb that image. So in a way, I have to allow my mind to become so calm. But it doesn't mean to be empty. So let's have a short experience. Just sit nicely. I'm this peaceful being. I'm surrounded by all sorts of things. Sounds and scenes and people, situations, but I'm in the center of all, very calm. Like the center of something's not moving. Everything's moving around it, but in the center, no. So mentally I'm sitting in that center. In the same way I was sitting on my physical seat, I'm sitting on my mental seat behind the eyes, just a few centimeters back behind the middle of the forehead. And I'm sitting there very calmly, in the same way I'm sitting on a seat. And I remember that I am this peaceful being. I am this spiritual being. I'm the one giving life to this body and all of the activities I do through it. And as this, you know, at this spiritual dimension, actually there are other things. There are other things, for example. There are other dimensions beyond here. Where was I before I came to this physical plane? And about the source, the one we call God, the divine, the Allah, Jehovah, Shiva, so many names, the great spirit. What's the connection with the source? And can I reconnect somehow? And these are the things, if I really want to become spiritually powerful and therefore activate all of those other qualities that I need as a leader, I have to understand myself as a soul. And also connect up with that source to really get the power and the insight to face the world that we're going through. So anyway, these were some thoughts about the situation. I hope everything's well with you. I hope you stay well, you stay healthy, and you stay in peace. Om Shanti.
It is not so difficult to be calm whilst we work. It does not mean to empty our minds to create peace inside. And often we have thought that to sit in meditation means to leave work. It is not so. We can be calm whilst working. We can enjoy the peace of our mind even when leading, talking, doing everything that we do regularly. Thank you, Ken, for awakening us to a new way of working.
My name is Renu Khanna, and I am the CEO and founder of Humix. Humix is an organization which is into building human excellence. That's where I found my connectivity with the Brahma Kumaris. Brahma Kumaris also talk about excellence in individuals, in families, in relationships, in organizations, in the nation, and across the globe. I first heard Sister Shivani almost 7 years back in her program called Awakening with Brahma Kumaris. Well, she talked of concepts which were so simple, but we were defining these concepts all alone. I still very well remember she had mentioned that stress is not normal, anxiety is not normal, fear is not normal, competition is not normal. And it set me thinking, as human beings, we always thought that they were all very, very normal. I visited the Brahma Kumaris at Mount Abu 2 times for their retreats and got these messages reinforced into myself. I internalized them and then I worked on all this while I was delivering my own facilitation sessions. The values, the fundamental belief systems, the limiting belief systems, the right kind of attitude, the right kind of emotions, I think fundamentally lead to that path of peace and happiness. Till now, we were searching for this happiness outside all through. I think Brahma Kumaris made me realize that all these things are within ourselves and we have choices to make in life. Once I understood this myself, it was very easy for me to do my coaching conversations with people, which were much deeper, which were much richer, and it focused on the fundamental ethics and values of an individual. I've been in this profession almost for about 30 years now, and I left the corporate in 2016 to start up and be my own boss and empower myself. I do a lot of programs for women employees because I believe women need a little more strength than the others. And these programs are also loaded with self-esteem, self-confidence. How does one empower oneself?
I think the best thing that I've learned from the Brahma Kumaris is be human. Because humanity is what will take this entire world forward. I've created an acronym for myself on human, where H stands for humility. I think Brahma Kumaris focused a lot on that. And as leaders, as we go up the corporate ladder, humility is something that we must demonstrate. The U is for understanding. We must seek to understand ourselves first and also understand others if we want to build long-lasting relationships. The M is for maturity. I think somewhere in this entire journey, every day we are maturing. And if we listen to some of the discourses, the Murli or Brahma Kumaris, I think the maturity comes in. The A is about acceptance. I think all this time we were denying lots of things. We were living in denial. So acceptance of others and acceptance of ourselves is very, very important. And lastly, the N, which is all about being non-judgmental. Somewhere in life, we are always comparing, criticizing, cribbing, condescending upon others. I think we truly need to become human beings. The being has to get elevated. Somewhere we become human beings. During the COVID time, I spent a lot of time with people, listening to some of their anxieties and fears and giving them the confidence that every cloud has a silver lining. God, give me the courage to change the things that I can, the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Brahma Kumaris have given me the courage to change a lot of things. My journey still continues. It's a long journey, and I've started walking on it. Hopefully, many others will join me in this journey too, and get that happiness and peace that they are looking for from themselves.
धूप में कब छांव बनकर लहरों में कभी नाव बनकर धूप में कभी छांव बनकर लहरों में कभी नाव बनकर लड़खड़ाए कदम थामा है हाथ जब लड़खड़ाए कदम थामा है हाथ मेरे बाबा है साथ मेरे बाबा है साथ मेरे बाबा है साथ मेरे बाबा है साथ है बाबा मेरे साथ मेरे बाबा है साथ जब भी छाने लगे ये अंधेरा मेरे संग संग चले जो सवेरा जब भी छाने लगे ये अंधेरा मेरे संग संग चले जो सवेरा हर लम्हा दीप बन के जले कांटों पे भी मेरे संग संग चले अब तो लगता है जन्नत बने हयात मेरे बाबा है साथ मेरे बाबा है साथ मेरे बाबा है साथ मेरे बाबा है साथ, है बाबा मेरे साथ, मेरे बाबा है साथ, है बाबा मेरे साथ, मेरे बाबा है साथ।
ॐ शांति। I used to look outside for my strength, for my confidence and for my happiness. Brahma Kumari taught me that it is all inside. The inside strength, positive thinking has been helping me every day to go through this uncharted time. I am determined that I will come out of this with a new skill, with more knowledge and better health. And also with more determination to look within myself and create my inner confidence and inner strength. This has been the greatest learning from Brahma Kumari which I learned since I have been associated for them for a while. I hope everybody stays safe. Om Shanti.
How to harness the inner power of mind? How to harness our inner powers using the ancient Raja Yoga meditation. Meditation, of course, is supposed to strengthen us. It is supposed to empower us. It is supposed to enlighten us. And that is what people have done over centuries. To understand this aspect of meditation, we bring you to the fourth lesson of meditation. In this morning session, we have Brahma Kumari's Sister Deepa with us. Sister Deepa has been a meditation teacher for many decades. She lives in Mumbai and she is known for bringing spirituality to current times with a language that youngsters can apply to. She has been a professional trainer in many IT companies and multinationals where she has brought in spirituality to the mainstream. Now over to Sister Deepa on the topic Harnessing Inner Powers.
Om Shanti. Today let us discover those spiritual innate powers which we can experience and enjoy in our life through the regular practice of Raja Yoga meditation. When we talk about our daily life in the present scenario, we find we do face many challenges. And then some challenges come in the area of our relationships, others in the form of our work situations, especially our targets. And then some come in the form of situations suddenly which come up, which are unpredictable and we have to manage them. And yet there are other challenges which sometimes come from within, where we feel a lot of mood swings in our state of mind. Sometimes I feel everything is okay in my life and everything is moving smooth, and there are times where I feel nothing is okay and I'm not so good, I don't feel comfortable. So let's try to discover what are those spiritual powers which we do experience, we do accumulate through practice of Raja Yoga meditation, which will help us to deal with these situations. When we talk about relationships, we find Raja Yoga meditation helps us to accumulate the power of tolerance and the power to accommodate. The power to tolerate, which we find the word tolerance is something which we really feel is very relevant in our life today, and all of us have an aim of being able to be tolerant, calm, stable, to be able to respond to people rather than react with them. And yet we find that unknowingly, when situations come up and people, you know, behave unreasonably, they say something which is so negative towards us and they are so harsh, they are aggressive, so something within me also, you know, stirs up and I feel that humiliation, I feel that anger within, and because of that I also start reacting. Now whenever we react, what happens is that we find that our relationships get disturbed, they are strained, and that's not what we want. How do I experience that power of tolerance? The word tolerance we find is very beautifully described in nature by the tree. As we find that the tree, the more the fruit the tree has, the more stones it has to bear. that is a tree, realizes that as much as it has those roots, its nature of giving allows it to experience that innate strength to be always giving fruits, even though it is going to face stones. And so we find that how do I also experience that power from within, where I can use my innate virtues and constantly allow myself to respond on the basis of my innate values, virtues, qualities. Whenever a person is behaving unreasonably, we find that at that time, that person physically, externally looks aggressive, a lot of energy outside, but internally, that person is not calm, he is unstable, and he's very weak emotionally. He's not able to even control his own feelings and emotions. And so that time, if I'm able to have this spiritual understanding, the spiritual perspective towards the situation, and see his state of mind, or her state of mind, we are able to understand that that person at that moment is in pain or stress or frustration. And so the best response would be to be able to remain calm, stable, allow that person to settle, come back to his innate stability, calmness, and then after some time when we feel yes, it's okay, then we talk to him and discuss or share whatever our ideas are. And so we find that as soon as we take that decision to respond, to remain calm, that inner power of tolerance, where tolerance does not mean suppression, because many times we say, yes, we tolerate, but it's like five times I tolerated, then there's a limit. And so what happens the sixth time? I react. Now, as soon as I react the sixth time, all those feelings and emotions which were there within me for those five times, when I was listening to this person and was not saying anything, those feelings and emotions are let out in that sixth time. It's more like a explosion. So somewhere, those five times, I was not tolerating. I was only suppressing my feelings and emotions. The power of tolerance means where I'm able to change my understanding towards the situation and that individual. So as soon as I see that person as, at that time, not in a good state of mind, in a weak state of mind, in pain, in stress, I'm able to take that step behind, remain calm, remain stable, and allow that person to settle. And as I use the power of tolerance, we find that we need the power to accommodate, because we find that every individual has so many virtues but also has weaknesses. And so the power to accommodate is very beautifully again in nature shown to us by the ocean. Such a vast ocean. And we find that the ocean has the power to absorb everything, all the river bodies it takes in. Takes in everything, but the ocean has the wisdom that what it feels is not good enough to take in, it just throws out on the shore. In the same way, the power to accommodate when we deal with people is to listen, to take in, to understand. But when I see that this person is at that time being influenced by his weakness, by his negativity, I choose not to absorb that negative energy. I allow myself to forgive that person and only see his virtues. Only remember those opportunities where he has been able to work through his virtues and, allow that relationship to have a lot of trust, cooperation, support for each other. And so as soon as I choose to accommodate, that means forgive this person and see his virtues and qualities, that gives me the power to tolerate and remain easy and stable for some time, so that I allow that person to heal his state of mind, come back to a state of lightness, positivity, stability, and then I'm able to allow that relationship to become positive again. So we find that these two powers, the power to tolerate and the power to accommodate, help us to heal relationships. When I see this individual only on the basis of his weaknesses, of his past experiences with me where he has not behaved rightly or she has not done right things with me, then we are holding on to those things and we are unable to forgive. And because I'm not able to forgive, I'm just allowing those weak thoughts, those negative thoughts to remain in my mind and heart throughout the day. And so the vibrations which are being shared with this individual throughout the day, the energy which is reaching this individual throughout the day is negative. And so what happens, slowly and slowly that relationship becomes weaker, the relationship becomes more strained, and the feelings of good wishes between each other become less and less. And so that's the time when we find that we normally complain that, well, I have done so much good for this person, but this person doesn't respond, this person behaves unreasonably, this person doesn't cooperate. So many times it's so important for us to understand that I may have done some good things or right things on the basis of my role, responsibility or duty, maybe in the family or maybe at work also. But what I have been thinking about this person is so important. And so relationships are sustained by our quality of thoughts and feelings for each other. And so if I have developed these powers of tolerance through Rajyoga meditation, I understand that this person is also at that moment under the influence of his own or her own weakness. And so I give the space to that individual to allow himself to settle. And in that time, in that silence within, I send good vibrations to that person. I am able to remind myself of those moments where that person has given me happiness, where that person has behaved so lovingly, with care, with concern, compassionately. And I am able to send those good vibrations, those good wishes, so that that energy slowly, slowly allows that individual to settle and heal the relationship. And then we find the power to accommodate is where I am able to let go. I am able to just forgive this person and not hold on to those negative feelings or those negative emotions which were created in the past because of some situation. And so as I am using this power to accommodate, where I keep only the goodness of that individual in my heart, in my mind, then we find that both these powers help us to sustain the sweetness of that relationship. And we find that then we are able to heal relationships. We are able to come back and connect with each other with more love, with more understanding, and sustain those good feelings for each other. We find that along with relationships, we find, especially in a work area, it's our performance which is very important. Every day we have so many things to do, targets to meet, and so many issues to handle. Many times multitasking is there, so many things to deal with, respond to. And at that time, it is these two powers, the power to discriminate and the power to decide, which are so important for us to be able to deal with issues which are at work, to be able to enhance our efficiency at work. The power to discriminate or discern. And we find that very beautifully in an example we can see as a very wonderfully, when you see a jeweler, he is discriminating those different jewels. And when you see him working on it, and he has those tools with him, but he also has wisdom, experience, and he also has focus, concentration. And so he is able to distinguish between those stones which are there, those beautiful stones which maybe look like diamonds, but actually are just pieces of glass. And so he is able to distinguish between a diamond or a piece of glass. And as we find that because he is having that wisdom, for him it becomes easy. So the power to discriminate makes to have wisdom, understanding, where I need to discriminate a person, an individual, that is a soul, then discriminate people with that, the situation, the circumstances of the situation, then also discriminate the time. Sometimes I may be doing the right thing, but it's not the right time. Like maybe I'm correcting someone, but when I'm correcting him, when he's in a state of mind where he's just feeling bad about something, maybe there's a challenge in the family, maybe his health is not so good, or maybe he's in a group sitting with, people, or in some meeting. At that time, if I try to correct him, then he feels insulted, he feels hurt. Or maybe I may be, supporting someone, and, constantly there could be a situation where now I need to make that person independent. I may be wanting to say something little strong, but the time is so important. The individual, Now, if the individual is sensitive, whether the individual is open, it's so important. So, because of that, if I understand the person's state of mind, his person's personality, then responding to him or her becomes more easier. Or the situation, like we need the power to tolerate, which we were talking about now, but we also need the power to face. Now, when there's a difficult situation, we need the power to face. But when it's a difficult person, then, or maybe we can't say difficult, we can say a different person who's behaving a little, unreasonably with us. At that time, we need the power to tolerate. But most of the times, what do we do? We do just the opposite. And if this person is getting upset with me and he's speaking aggressively, he's speaking unreasonably, I react. I face this person and say, why? Why did you say like this? How could you say like this? This is not right. This is not right. You can't tell me like this. And when it's a situation, I just stand behind and I just say, what can I do? Oh, it's this person. It's a situation. I can't do anything. I was not told anything. How can I do anything? So at that time, we tolerate. We sit back and, we just feel helpless. And so we find that it's so important for us to discern where to use which power. I need to speak, I need to be silent. But where I should speak and where I should be silent. Like officially I'm in a meeting and maybe there is something which is being presented by some senior who's experienced. And this person is saying something, but maybe he said something which is wrong, which is not relevant. Because you know you were part of that team and you know that this is not right and this should be like this. But if I try to stop the conversation immediately and start saying something, the environment will be disturbed. It will not feel good. And so at that time, I need to be silent. And maybe separately, when I can talk to this person, I can share with him. So where I should speak, where I should be silent. Now, if I'm in a meeting and I'm being asked to share my ideas, if that time I'm silent and I say, no, I want to only listen, that also is not relevant. No, that time I need to speak. I need to talk about whatever is my idea, whatever I'm working on. So where I should speak, where I should be silent, that power to discern. And as we find that the calmness comes, through meditation we remain more calmer, we remain more stable, and so we are able to enhance this power to discern. It's like an example, if we take, we have two pages. One page has 5 words, one page has 100 words, and I'm asked to discriminate how many times the letter A is repeated in both these pages. Now, which one will be easier? Naturally, the page with 5 words will be easier because it's just 5 words which you need to read. In the same way, we find lesser is the information, lesser is the inputs, lesser is the, inputs which are there, lesser is my thoughts, more powerful is my power to discern. So the more less I think, the more positive I think, the more calmer I am within, my clarity of thought increases and so I am able to discern well. The more, stressed I am, the more negative I am thinking, the more clutter there is in my mind, less is my power to discern. And with the power to discern, we find we need the power to decide. Because once I've discerned, then now I need to take a decision. Now, the power to decide is again very beautifully shown by the Goddess of Justice. And I'm sure in some movies sometime you must have seen the Goddess of Justice blindfolded with a scale and having this blindfolded on her eyes. And so what does this represent? So we find that being blindfolded represents being unbiased, the scale represents balance. So what is its connection with the power to decide? And we find that whenever we see through these physical eyes, what do we see? Because we find that, we need the being blindfolded, is just a representation of being unbiased and non-judgmental. We also need to be unbiased and non-judgmental. So should we blindfold ourselves? No, that's not possible. So actually, it just represents that these eyes see the physical thing. Now, when I'm seeing something at a physical level, I see this individual's name, I see this individual's maybe features, maybe I see his background, his educational background, his financial background, his background with perspective of religion, state which he belongs, country which he belongs, the color which he has, and so many other factors of his personality, which are seen visibly. And we find that on the basis of that, if I see him and try to understand, there could be a bias. But when I see him with the basis of spiritual wisdom, I see him with the understanding of being able to see that innate being within, that is a spiritual being, the being of light or energy which is seated between the forehead. When I see the soul, then what happens? There is this unconditional good wishes for this person, and I am able to remain more open and be more unbiased and non-judgmental. And with that we find that balance is so important. Now like the scale, if you see, that if I hold on to the pointer and if I hold on to it straight, then what happens? There's a balance. So we find that as much as my mind and intellect are together, are in union, are in stability, there is a balance of love and law, a balance of virtues, that is a balance of the soft and hard, a balance of logic and emotion, where I know rational thinking is important, logic is important. Practically, I need to be very rational in my approach, but I also need to have feelings, emotions for people when I'm interacting with them. I need to have a lot of determination for myself, but when I'm with people, I need to be flexible, open with them. If I'm determined with myself, that's fine. But if I'm determined with others, it will seem I'm rigid, I'm stubborn. I have to have a lot of self-esteem, but with people I have to have a lot of humility. A balance of both is important. I have to have a lot of a lot of future vision for myself, ambition, a lot of enthusiasm to move forward. But I have to have a lot of deep contentment and happiness and stability where I am today. I need to enjoy that. So when there's a balance of both, there's a lot of enthusiasm and happiness in my life. And so we find that this balance comes only when my mind and intellect are connected with myself. They both are together, they are in union, aligned with my own innate self. And when my mind and intellect is aligned with the divine, very beautifully it is said, जब हमारी बुद्धि बुद्धिवानों की बुद्धि के साथ जुड़ जाती है तो वो श्रेष्ठ शक्ति जो है परमात्म बुद्धि जो है वो हमें गाइड करती है. That higher wisdom guides us at a day-to-day level. So we are able to take right decisions. And those decisions are called intuitive decisions. And so we find that with this practice of meditation, our power to discriminate and our power to decide will help us to handle a lot of work and, fulfill those responsibilities much more easily. We find that with that, we face also different situations. Difficult situations which just, suddenly come up in front of us and we are sometimes not prepared for them. And so having the power to face them, that courage. And so very beautifully it is said that fortune favors the brave. And so if I have that one step of courage in front of me, I take that one step of courage in front, automatically I receive multi-million fold help from the divine. Himmat te bachcha, madad e khuda. And so that courage, that complete faith in myself and faith in the divine. So that courage from within enables me to experience a lot of support from the environment, from my own experiences and from the divine. So the power to face is the courage which I need to keep for my own self. Because I understand that every situation has come to strengthen me. Very beautifully it is said, ki har tufan tofa le aata hai. Every obstacle is a stepping stone to victory. So I move ahead or I learn from those difficult situations. I actually find that in my life, if you go back to your life and you find that what you've grown in your life, you become more stronger from which situations? Only those situations where you achieved success, where there was a lot of happiness, the right things happened at the right time. Those things really made you stronger. Or actually it was those difficult situations where things didn't work out, where you really felt alone and you didn't have support of many people around you, and yet you kept that courage in yourself. And courage helped you to experience that support of the divine, of the supreme, and you were able to move forward. So you learned so much, you became more stronger You became more powerful. You had more understanding that now, whatever happens in front of me in my life, this will make me stronger. This will help me to grow. And so we find that the power to face enables us to become strong, but also enables us to receive support from the environment. And when I am courageous, I will automatically receive support from people around me. And so we find that the power to cooperate supports the power to face. The power to cooperate, which we very beautifully in scriptures, there is this story about Govardhan Parvat, that is this big mountain which was actually lifted by the support of everyone. Everyone contributed with their finger. So finger represents that little cooperation. So everyone giving that little cooperation enables the whole situation to be dealt with more easily. Like now, in today's COVID situation, everyone is supporting. Doctors, our COVID warriors are doing their work. Then we have so many social service organizations, we have government, we have every individual who's taking care of themselves, who's following their precautions. So it's only with the support of everyone that we are able to deal with this. And even today we find that because of the lockdown, we didn't have helpers coming at home. And so we recognize that actually in our daily life, we are taking support of so many people. So many people are helping us for us to even fulfill our daily responsibilities. And when we missed them, we found that we had to do so many things. So we were at home, but yet we were so busy looking after every aspect of our household work, supporting, our life partners. And so we find that every day we are taking support of so many people. We are receiving cooperation from everyone, and so we need to give cooperation. Dena hi lena hai. That is, when we give cooperation, we automatically become entitled, worthy of receiving cooperation. And so when we talk about cooperation, we mean a group of people together. And so many times it's said that panch ungliyan ek jaise nahi hogi, that these five fingers cannot be one. So everyone is different. So uniqueness is important. Now suppose these five fingers are there. Suppose we think that maybe these five fingers become like each other. Suppose all of them become of the same shape and size. What will happen to the utility of this hand? Will it increase or decrease? Actually, it will decrease. So their uniqueness is very important. Each finger, the uniqueness is very important. So in the same way, each one of us, whether it's at home or whether it's in the organization, we are different, we are unique, and our virtues and qualities, talent is so important for the higher purpose of that organization. So coming together is so important. Diversity and yet synergy. Being different and yet being together, bonded. And so we find that it's like a piece of music which has different musical notes and very beautifully arranged by the rhythm. So the music composer very beautifully creates that rhythm to connect those different musical notes. And if the rhythm is missing, someone plays that music and the rhythm is missing, it becomes noise. Now noise also has different musical notes. Music also has different musical notes. But the difference is the rhythm, the arrangement. And so each one of us is different. But when we are connected with each other, with a higher purpose, when we are connected with each other by respect, respecting each one's virtues, each one's qualities, each one's role, seeing each other's virtues and qualities, we find that that rhythm of good wishes, that rhythm of respect, that rhythm of unconditional love and acceptance for each other creates music. So if there's noise, I can create music. And if there's music, I need to sustain that rhythm, sustain those good wishes for each other. And so cooperation is so important, cooperation with myself to make my life better. But also at this present time, I need to cooperate with the divine. And God also, we find, is taking up, nature and God are taking up this task of transformation, cleansing the world. And so we need to cooperate. So I change, the world changes. For this world to become better, which is the task of the divine, I need to cooperate by taking up that project or taking up the responsibility for self-change, for self-growth, for self-empowerment. And so we find that these powers to face and the power to cooperate help us to deal with difficult challenges in our life. And the last two powers which we find are the power to withdraw and the power to pack up. And they are more like, you know, spiritual grammar. The power to withdraw talks about the pause button, and the power to back up talks about the stop button. You know, so like any electronic gadget, we have these two, you know, buttons, pause and stop. So in our life, we need both. We need to pause, surely, throughout the day. And you find that in this COVID situation, it was like nature putting on the pause button for us. And it was so needed. It was so needed for nature also. We find that, especially in the initial, you know, 1 or 2 months, nature settled. We find the environmentalists, they talked about the figures and they talked about how the pollution became less. We found traffic also became less. We also find that this pause button enabled each one of us to realize that we need to take some time out for my own self. I need to take some time out for my family, for my own emotional, mental healing, empowerment. It's so important. In today's situations also, when we read the newspaper every day, we find that it's so important. So that pause, even throughout the day, is important. So after every hour, a minute of silence. We use that at the Brahma Kumaris. We call it as traffic control. We have a site which says just a minute. And you can go on to that site and we have these little commentaries for a minute. And so taking that little minute, creating that peace time for myself, creating that drop of time where I can reconnect to that inner calmness, inner strength, inner stability. And then come back to a situation again, come back to the present again, feeling more refreshed, feeling more charged. And so throughout the day, every hour, taking a minute for myself, taking that little space for myself where I energize myself. And then we find that throughout the day, taking that little pause is so important, but also putting a full stop sometimes. Full stop to the past, because there's something which is bothering me about the past. Yes, there is something which has happened, which I feel that I should have not said that, I should have not done that. But let me learn from that. Let me now just learn from that situation and put a full stop. Once I put a full stop, I don't think about that. I just keep the learning, the experience in my heart. I don't allow myself to have negative thoughts for myself. That is no self-guilt, neither negative thoughts for people who may have behaved negatively towards us in the past. So forgiving them is so important. So putting a full stop to the past and putting a full stop to the worry about the future, because I need to be in the present. Now, like I am here, okay? So maybe you're listening to this session today. So you've taken a decision in the past that you should be there available for this program which you're watching. So that decision of the past enables you to experience the present. That is, you're watching the program, you're listening. Whatever decision you take now will, you know, the fruit of that decision, the result of that decision will be reflected where? In the future. And so we find that we can change our past. Yes. We can't change today's past, but tomorrow's past, yes, we can surely change. We need to be in the present. So putting a full stop means being in the present, letting go of the past and not worrying about the future, because the future is created in the present. And so we find this also means that we are in a journey. And so in this journey of life also, there will come a time where there will be a full stop. That is, there's a time when we have to return back. And so we all have a return ticket. And we find that whenever we complete this journey, what is those, you know, wonderful assets or resources which we can take with ourselves? And we find that at a physical level, we cannot take anything with us. But yes, we can surely take a lot of good karma, blessings, love, happiness, joy, which we have accumulated every day. And so I have to check throughout the day. So today I worked, I finished my targets, I took care of my responsibilities at home. I did so many things for my physical health. But how many blessings did I accumulate? How much good karma did I accumulate? How much love and happiness did I accumulate? Because that's the asset which will travel with me. And so we find the power to back up, that is putting a full stop, and the power to pause, that is the power to withdraw. Both these are very important to sustain our inner calmness, our inner self-esteem. So whenever I feel disturbed, it may be something of the past where I need to actually take a moment to pause, put a full stop, learn, forgive, come back and enjoy myself in the present. And so these two powers help me to sustain that inner joy, inner sense of lightness and happiness throughout the day. And so we find that today we have discovered these spiritual powers, the power to tolerate and the power to accommodate, to heal our relationships, the power to discern and the power to decide so that I'm much more efficient at work situations in any area of my life, the power to be responsible, the power to face and the power to cooperate for difficult situations in front of me, the crisis situations in front of me, and the power to pack up and the power to take some time to pause and refresh, that is the power to withdraw and pack up for my self-healing, self-empowerment. So we are able to experience these powers and accumulate them in the daily practice of Rajyoga meditation. Thank you very much. Om Shanti.
Thank you very much, Sister Deepa, for taking us on an inner journey of understanding what our inner powers are. We all know that we have the ability to tolerate, to face, to judge, to discern. But yet, we did not understand it as a power. And when we understand the nature of this power, that to tolerate means to be powerful, to face means to be powerful, to discern means to be powerful, we no longer are the victims of it. When we tolerate, tolerance has become my power now. I will enjoy whilst I tolerate something. And I guess this is of course a new way of thinking, of doing, of living. Thank you so much, Sister Deepa, for sharing those insights with us. Thank you very much for joining in on the morning session of the third day of the ITWing conference of the Brahma Kumaris Rajyoga Education Research Foundation. I hope your morning has been enjoyable. I will see you again in the evening sessions. Till then, take care and enjoy a new way of living.